Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Dwayne Anderson to the broadcast. Dwayne is the Chief Information Officer of Marquette Group and U.S. Motivation. Marquette Group specializes in generating qualified, measurable leads by promoting national brands through print and online yellow pages, interactive advertising, and direct mail. U.S. Motivation is a full-service incentive management company focusing on incentive strategies and awards, group travel and meetings, creative communications, and business analytics. Prior to his current position, Dwayne worked at Harrah's Entertainment, where he was Director of IT Program Management, Director of IT Integration during Harrah's acquisition of Caesars Entertainment, and he joined Harrah's as the Executive Associate to CIO Tim Stanley. Prior to his time at Harrah's, Dwayne was a manager in the Strategy and Technology Practice at A.T. Kearney and a Systems Engineer at EDS. Dwayne graduated with a BA in mathematics from Western Michigan University and with an MBA from the Kelley School of Business at Indiana University. I recently caught up with Dwayne in his office in Atlanta. Our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as we discussed Dwayne's preparation for himself and his team for the challenges ahead. Principle 2, Infrastructure, as we discussed his efforts of reducing costs of the IT operation. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discuss Dwayne's relationship with his business partners and the ways in which IT helps the business make better decisions, as well as some other topics. Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thanks, Pete. I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful. Well, Dwayne, you're the CIO of Marquette Group and U.S. Motivation. For our listeners who may not be so familiar with those businesses, I wonder if you could please take a moment and describe your role as well as describing the company more generally speaking.
Sure thing, Pete. The Marquette Group, first company you mentioned, is based in Peoria, Illinois. We're the industry leader in generating qualified leads by promoting brands through our print and interactive yellow pages, interactive advertising, and direct mail. So really, we use these channels to help our customers be found and then convert from their other customers. One of the things that we think is really important with that business from a data standpoint is response measurement and tracking with those businesses where technology really plays a key lead. And what that means is that when someone places an ad in the yellow pages or on Google or on somewhere else, we're able to track the number of calls that came as a result of that ad. Then we're also able in some cases to track the number of conversions for that. So the end buyer, our customers, can see in very clear terms what their advertising spend actually produced for dollars in the end. As our CEO calls it, we provide wisdom back to our customers on that. We've also recently acquired two Canadian operations based in Toronto and Montreal that are in a similar space to Marquette, and we're still determining how best to integrate them with our key processes. But we're excited about those businesses and think they have a lot of opportunity to grow and be very synergistic with the Marquette Group. Kind of full stop there. We've got a separate business that does some very different things in Atlanta, Georgia called U.S. Motivation. What U.S. Motivation does is they're a full-service incentive management company which focuses on incentive strategies and awards, group travel and meetings, and creative communications and business analytics. So, and actually a good portion of the Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 are actually our clients. So we do a lot of work, especially for some of the bigger local companies here in Atlanta. Of the two companies, this is much more the pure technology solutions company, which means that the products we take to market are awards product, our virtual product, our travel products. Those are really technology products that we take to deliver value to the customers. And then we have a great creative team that kind of makes them look different and skin those for each of the things we do there. Functionally, in terms of what I do here, I'm the CIO. I'm responsible for all areas of, you know, what you call traditional IT organization, the program and project management, development and architecture, infrastructure. And then from a business standpoint, I own the business intelligence functions, which that's kind of a lofty term right now. Really, it means we're trying to get our reporting and our data in order kind of from the, build and maintain a robust IT infrastructure. I read the book, but you know, that really is a focus for us right now is getting our data architecture in place and our reporting architecture And then I think we're, you know, once that's in place, we're really going to be cooking with the big BI goal. I report to the senior leadership team here. So our president, Eric Webb, and our CEO, Chris Cummings, were nice enough to give me the opportunity to come in for both companies. And then, you know, one of the things I was really looking for in a first CIO job was the ability to sit on the senior team. So to not necessarily, and what's nice about coming into a medium-sized company is sometimes in bigger companies, the CIO role you can find underneath the COO, or as a real throwback underneath the CFO. This is an opportunity to come in and be a peer with, you know, my finance peers, my operations peers, and really be involved in the big kind of change the company decisions.
That's wonderful. Actually, a good segue to the next question, Dwayne. This is your first CIO role, as you mentioned. I wonder if you can walk us through some of your key learnings thus far.
Absolutely. You know, and this has been a great learning experience for me. You know, number one, this is the first time I've had all of the major IT functions reporting to me as one. I've owned, you know, kind of growing up through my career, I've owned pieces of development. I've owned, you know, big chunks of project management, even a little bit of infrastructure in the early going, but I've never had the whole puzzle fit together, which is something I've always wanted to have. And, you know, the dog kind of caught the car in this case. and now I'm having fun working with those and kind of particularly with some of the synergies we can find between our different businesses. Second thing is, you know, I was wonderfully lucky at Harrah's to have the bosses and the leadership that I had there, many of whom have appeared on your podcast that I've listened to between, you know, the Tim Stanleys and John Bauschies and then other folks like, you know, the Charlie Palings and Ann Metzgers and David Richters that, you know, really, and many others, so I'm forgetting to mention, who really helped to, you know, one, train me in the areas and two, provide support. Here, that's not here. My bosses have never run or had IT reporting to them. So, you know, it used to be that I could look left and there was still somebody to look left to when there was an open question. Now it's, you know, it comes to me. So that's neat. And it's a different level of responsibility than I've had before. And then third, I guess I was probably, I shouldn't have been as surprised by this one as I was. I'm surprised by how thin my time is spread and how much of my time is spent doing more, you know, what our CEO calls working on the business versus working in the business. So I have to really be reliant on the teams here and the structure that's put in place and some of the controls. I think, you know, I looked at my time a few months ago and almost a third of my time is not spent working in either of the businesses directly that we talked about at the start. It's in either, you know, strategic planning meetings or staff planning sessions or, you know, evaluating new market opportunities or things like that. All very important, you know, C-level things to be a part of, but it just further slices your ability to go and be day-to-day in the core function.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's, you know, I do feel like I'm more effective as an executive just given that, you know, now I am hearing firsthand what the strategy is. So even though I have limited time now, I'm much more, I guess, precisely able to bring back and then make sure that the end product that we're developing meets, you know, what the folks that sit in the boardroom hope to get.
That's great. And as you mentioned, actually, since you are now a peer to most of the other C-level folks, the bridges that you're building are meaningful
yep.
bridges. That information flow is particularly important.
Yep.
Well, good. You mentioned, again, that this is a relatively new position for you. You've been here for less than a year. I wonder, how did you organize yourself in terms of getting to know a new business? This was an industry you hadn't played in
yep.
previously. How did you get your bearings and ramp yourself up in terms of what this business does?
Well, number one, the senior leadership team at Marquette and U.S. Motivation did a wonderful job of onboarding me, meaning that, you know, there's always kind of the kerplunk of documents you get or that you need to look for, but they did a really nice job of putting together a 2 to 3 page document that said, here's the things we need you to solve. Here's the things we need you to have an opinion on. Here's the things we're not sure if they're right or wrong, but, you know, check them out.
So
they had been going through this search for some time. And, you know, so I think they'd had a lot of time to talk about it. So one, they gave me a little bit of a course map for where they wanted me to go. And of course, you know, given those are the folks that are now paying my bills, I tried to respect that as much as possible. The key areas where I focused on individually, you know, and kind of wrap those in are really no different than when I've taken over any other role or department. It's just more of a, you know, change in scope. So first thing always, especially when you have business bosses, is make sure you get a sense of the total cost of ownership of IT and understand what they should really be investing. I think, you know, this is the one area where you lose credibility quick with senior business folks or with peers if, you know, you don't kind of have a good sense for how the dollars are coming in and out and how they're invested. And it's not, that doesn't mean you spend the first 3 weeks being an accountant. It just means, you know, that's one of the things in addition to you know, the list of four or five things that you've really got to quickly get your arms around, particularly, and that's just not just an IT thing. I think any general manager coming in to a major organization needs to take a look at something like that. Second, you know, what I'd call people in organizations. So taking a look at the structure for how we were set up at both companies, spending time obviously with the internal staff, meeting with our different vendors, and going through the processes there. Third, spend time with key internal customers, so and some of our external customers as well. So everyone who is my peer set, you know, that next level down and as deep as I could go in some of the areas, because it's, you know, the closer you can get to the work, sometimes the richer data you get. And, you know, as part of that onboarding document that the executive team had given me, they'd done a nice job too of saying, you know, here's your checklist for who you need to make sure and meet. You know, there's always a few projects that the business views as either runaway efforts or very important strategically. So, you know, while you love all your kids equally, those are the ones that probably get a little more attention. And part of my hiring profile was to, you know, help fix a few of those projects, having been so project focused in the years before I came here. And then really define how to measure IT. How should they look at IT and find what they do? And this was an interesting throwback. And I thought back to our time together at Harrah's, because this was really something where I took and, you know, dusted off some of the old world-class scorecards and, you know, tried to use that framework to establish some metrics around, you know, always up and are we delivering on time and on target and on budget, and then some of the internal things. So we're still kind of vacillating through what that should look like, but that is actually the framework for how we're taking a look at that. So, yes. You know, now some of those went really well. With some of them, there were some challenges. But what I've been really excited about in my first 9 months here is we've taken over $1 million out of the IT function. Now, that's not because we did a fire sale. What we actually did was we right-sized our spend across some different vendors and some different areas and found that we've increased our project delivery throughput and our customer satisfaction. We had, you know, in one of our businesses, we had some products that that the core of the products just weren't finished. So we were kind of constantly in there. So we defined what the end looked like for those products to get them to a proper product roadmap, which would require a little bit of investment, and put them there. Mm-hmm. And then we got a few projects that had just, or products that had just been in limbo or decisions in limbo through. So, you know, there's some nice early returns. I mean, the story, as I've always seen it with CIO roles, is, you know, the tale is told over 3 to 4 years. So mm-hmm. We've got lots of work still to do, but, you know, I think part of the way we were able to achieve that much change was because, one, they'd had the search for my position underway for a long time, and a lot of decisions have been held up, you know, because they figured maybe the new guy or girl will come in and change everything. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, there was a pent up set of things that just needed to get done. So I business was unfortunate. I was fortunate in my functional role to inherit that. And then, you know, what's been really great about working in a smaller or medium company is I have nothing but good things to say about the places that I worked with before, but I tell you, my IT steering committee, when we have an important project or initiative that needs to take place, whether it's disaster recovery or a CRM initiative, is, you know, I set up a meeting for the next day with, you know, the couple, 3 or 4 key decision makers and owners of the company. We go through what you go through in any company where you talk about, here's what the investment is, here's what the timeline is, here's the risks and the things I need from the business, and then, you know, the usual last bit of fun around, you know, and here's how much it will cost and I'd like incremental approval for it. We get to pretty quick decisions, and I'm able to drop those into our system pretty quickly. So an advantage of being, you know, more of a medium-sized company is we can, one, get approvals quick, and two, get those into the system and out into the field quicker, because there's not as many, you know, as what Tim Stanley would call corporate antibodies. So they're developing. They're developing here, but they're not all the way there yet. And then, you know, the one area I'm really excited about, in addition to all these others, is our internal business intelligence reporting. I think we've made some great strides there. And, you know, what I'm most excited about as a business person about the businesses is almost all of the data that we need is within our four walls or on our servers. We own it, or, you know, have gone through licensing terms to own that data. So now it's on us to figure out what, you know, we've got some good reports, and now it's on us to figure out how we really, really get all the key learnings out of that one, you know, we can use as a company to make sure we're servicing our customers best, and two, that we can back to our customers and say, hey, here's how your investments are paying off, or how, you know, the data might inform a different decision.
Yeah, very, very interesting. As I'm listening to you describe your experience here and the business that you have, clearly there's a data intensity to the work that the company does. It's no wonder, actually, that they they think enough of your role and of you as an individual to have you report to the most senior people in the organization. I wonder if you can go into a bit more depth and explain the role the technology plays in gathering, synthesizing, and reporting on data.
You know, like I said, Pete, the great thing about our businesses is that we have almost all of the data we need within our four walls. So now the challenge becomes, you know, you don't set out to boil the whole ocean. We have to figure out what's the most important sets of data or analysis that we want to have done, and that's something I'm partnering closely with the business on. So I think we've built almost what I would call a reporting roadmap at our Peoria business, where our goal is to every 3 to 4 months have a next major release of reports or data that, you know, always serves kind of three levels. One, the C-level can look at the data and you know, at their level understand what it means. Two is at the vice president or director level, they can get all the information that they need to, you know, run their day-to-day organization and not, you know, be flying blind in some areas. Mm-hmm. And then three, how that breaks down to the staff level. So an example of that is with sales. So at the C-level, they want to see, are we on target from our revenue standpoints? And, you know, if we are or we aren't, they want to drill down to understand what's going well across product lines or customers or whatever else. Then you take that down to the staff level. The staff person will have their, call it scorecard, for lack of a better term, that they can look at that shows them what their targets are. Mm-hmm. Are they on track to their targets and what the expectations are? And that information would all boil up with the other sales folks to the information that our CEO would look at. So it's a great, everyone's seeing the same information and getting it in, you know, the right call to action sort of formats appropriate to their role.
Great. Excellent. Another thing that I thought was very interesting about to the way you described the business is it's clearly very acquisitive. Mm-hmm. The organization grows a lot through acquisition. What do you see as the role that IT plays in these acquisitions?
You know, there's never a one-size-fits-all answer for this. I think I'll speak to, you know, some of the things that I've put into place with the companies that we've acquired. I think with IT, I always have a strong bias that core infrastructure stuff should be looked at to centralize first, because it's usually the quickest, and that means help desks, data centers, network support, phone lines, different things like that. So at least get everybody. So one, you instantly take advantage of more purchasing power. And two, you get a team that can kind of be shared and work across the different locations if someone's on vacation or things like that. Also, I have what I call a business operations function, which manages all of our IT financials and tracks at a brutal level of detail, which I like. You know, all the cash that comes in and out from vendors, when the deal's up for negotiation, what we think other prices could be based on sourcing for that. So I generally try to, if it's not one size fits all, at least we get the same spirit of those things into the locations. And actually across our four businesses right now, we are shared along those. What's trickier and tougher is when you start to talk about the core operational systems. We have a system in Peoria that's effectively our ERP system. It's an off-the-shelf built for our industry system. And were we to acquire someone, which there are no plans to do, were we to acquire someone, they would have a similar system. So there would be a big, you know, almost change management effort to take a look at what that would look like, as well as, you know, what do the staffs look like and how does the leadership go. But that's all, you know, pretty academic just based on what the need is. I do know that, you know, our leadership as well from a data standpoint, they don't want to have to learn and reorient to a whole different set of views around financials and key KPIs and things like that. So we have to get that looking as closely as possible so that they can apples to apples look at how the businesses are doing in terms and metrics that they've understood in the past.
That's great. But it's, what's also encouraging is it sounds like the business truly understands the strategic value that IT can play in these acquisitions, and therefore you've got this key seat at the table.
Yep.
Like a lot of CIOs during more difficult economic times, like the ones we're hopefully pulling out of now, you developed an initiative to save the company money. You mentioned that a little bit earlier. Could you describe how you've gone about determining where cost savings could be driven and making sure that as you're making cuts that you're trimming fat as opposed to muscle, so to speak?
Absolutely. I mean, first, I've always been trained, and I think about an IT budget. Well, you always have a capital plan and a P&L plan. I think about cash in, cash out. Meaning first, which means, you know, what we pay the employees, what we pay to our vendors, what we pay for licenses and everything else. And how I kind of break those down in my mind is across three major categories. One, utility expenses. Two, maintenance capital. three, the fun stuff we all like to do, new development and pushing capabilities out to the business. So first, with utility expenses, how I define that is things probably every office building in America needs, like data centers, T1 lines, phone systems, help desks, all that kind of stuff. My first goal is to make sure, you know, as I say, you're not paying too much for weed. So understand what the cost should be for the service, how important it is to the business from an uptime standpoint and everything else. And then we are constantly benchmarking these costs and taking them out to bid for appropriate. I mean, I sort of, how I relate it to the team is, you know, you wouldn't just have the same car insurance bill for 5 years. You would call somebody at some point, at least understand, are you paying too much, and understand why you don't. You know, if your cable bill starts to go way out of control, you start to understand what does DirecTV look like. So I'm trying to run utility expenses just like most people run their house. The second, and that's an area where we actually, you know, our ownership has been terrific, and the money we've taken off the table there, we've been able to, and that's a great model, plow it back into the new development. So the maintenance capital, which is, you know, all the refreshes of PCs and servers, and then some architectural efforts, generally the stuff that the business doesn't always understand this stuff, except for maybe new PCs when their PC is broke. But it's the things that, you know, to run an effective organization, you have to have a plan. So we have turned the dials down slightly on this, and we've been evaluating which departments or functions really need new PCs. Do we really need to replace a server here and there? It's not, you know, we haven't taken it from a, say, a 3-year refresh to a 5-year refresh. It's just been more, where are some of the surgical areas where we can kind of live on a little bit longer, or potentially take a PC that's retiring because it wasn't strong enough for a finance or planning and analytics person, and move it more to someone who maybe just needs to do email. So that's an area. So that's maintenance capital. And then three, where, you know, when the organization's working as it should, where I like to spend most of my time is on, you know, new development and capabilities, which means, you know, pushing the business forward with new stuff. And I think, you know, one of the things that's really excited me about the business leadership team at this company is that they really see the value here, and they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they're willing to invest in these capabilities, provided they get the returns, you know, just like any sensible business folks. But, you know, our year-over-year new development spend this year is up, and it's been up for a few years, which is, you know, which tells you a great thing about a company when, to make a general statement, the economy is not good for anyone right now, right? Everyone's losing some money right now. We're not doing as well as they'd hoped to do in the past. So when the best businesses I've always seen are the ones that clean up their balance sheet in that environment and invest in key capabilities. So when they come out of the storm, one, they're not strapped down by a big debt burden, and two, you know, they're not using capabilities that are 4 years old. So I think we're going to be in really good position to start going full blast again. So, and of course, you know, I sort of broke those down along financial targets. I mean, obviously the folks that make this go is, we've got a great internal staff at both locations. We've got the right vendor partners in place for us now. And obviously this is always, you're always going to have some areas of folks that are, you know, on the upside or on the downside with the vendor partners. So we're kind of working through that right now. But, you know, it's really the people that help make this go.
That's great. Dwayne, as a last question, I wonder if you could look into your crystal ball and look out into the future and talk a little bit about some trends, some technology trends that particularly excite you as it pertains to your business or your interests.
You know, I think the most interesting technology trend is more of a human resources trend. And I'll sort of take it back maybe 15 or 20 years when to get into the software development or, you know, anything to do with computers field, you had to have one of three or four very specific majors, you know, MIS or math or computer science or one of the engineerings. You then had to get a job with that, which wasn't always easy, at one of the places where they would properly train you, like, you know, EDS back in the day, IBM, Hewlett-Packard, whoever else. And then you would do that and almost go through a 3 to 4 year apprenticeship where you'd spend time doing infrastructure, you'd spend time doing development, you'd spend time doing project management. And it was almost like, you know, between college and your time in field, it was almost an 8-year apprenticeship program before you really turned into a valuable asset for a company. I think what's so interesting to me now is that technology is so accessible, and folks that are just a generation younger than us grow up with this stuff. My 7-year-old Googles. He gets on to the computer and he will Google football players or, you know, who left American Idol last night if he didn't stay up. Yes, we let him watch it. And and things like that. And I've seen, you know, particularly with our new developers who are in that, you know, I don't know what the cutoff point is, but less than 30. I mean, they come from very untraditional backgrounds. They you know, would likely not get jobs 15 years ago at some of the big places. But because they come with really unique backgrounds, like, you know, music or theater or math or business or other things, and the technology is in a place where, you know, they are able to be trained and apply that knowledge and bring their other learnings, I think there's just such a greater pool out there now of folks that can come in and help you. Now, the flip side to that is, because they don't go through all the training, there's usually a lack of, you know, potentially process or understanding how things need to work if you're part of a bigger project. But I just think that, you know, and we brought some new folks in here today to the Atlanta office, and it's just amazing when you look at the backgrounds and then you look at what they've done. It's just, you know, a great architect or a great coder can come from a whole bunch of different places now versus where, you know, some very finite routes that you really had to make a decision when you were 17 years old on before to do that.
So that's great. Very good point. Well, Dwayne, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks, Pete. I appreciate the opportunity.
Just listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT: Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people, doing the right jobs at the right time, it will be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure, defined as software, hardware, networks. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will likely become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. And if systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. Now, if the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming crucial to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our sound editor is Chris Davis, our web editor is Christian Dooley, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.